Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Carpcast. Hello Mark, how you doing?
I'm not so bad. How are yourself after your weekend exploits?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Another weekend pokering, so we apologise for the lateness of this episode. But I was out winning money again, which is always nice. And had a little run in the high roller at Dusk Till Dawn in Nottingham. Probably one of the toughest fields I've ever played in. Ended up coming third for a nice chunk of money, so that was good. What have you been up to? You been fishing?
I have. I'm on a bit of a run myself with the fish. Now, I put them on the Facebook page of the what I caught. I had six in the morning, the two-night session. And to be honest, the swim I caught from was my first choice. The only thing when I got there was full of pissed-up students having a barbecue and skinny dipping. So, you know, it went my second choice, other side of the lake. I got the binoculars out. All the students skinny dipping were male, so, you know, I was not happy with that. I couldn't even have a perv.
But you still got your binoculars out.
Oh, yeah, just in case. I was looking for fish, what were topping in between them, obviously. So I fished the first night. It looked good in the swim I was chosen, to be honest. There's, you know, a bit of weed growth up there. The wind was pushing in, so I left the rods out while about midday, longer than what I usually would, but nothing happened, nothing showed. Wound in, went searching. You know, the best bit of kit I've got is my walking boots. Couldn't find anything, didn't even see anything in my favoured swim opposite, but I set up there anyway. Nothing through the night. In the morning, I've thought to myself, because I've got my GoPro, my camera with me, I've not even used in that session, so I thought, I'll just set the GoPro onto the bobbins and I've not used it, I'll just leave it till the battery runs down. If it gets something, it gets something. And after about 20 minutes, it got my take.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was quite pleased with that. Landed a fish, it was 22 pounds. And I'm thinking, great, not a blank, because that's what it was looking like. Did a bit of periscoping with that fish. And I've since found that periscope just totally canes the data on your phone, and I've got to wait till the 15th before I can even look at Facebook without Wi-Fi now. It's nearly killing me. So, I put that fish back. I'm feeling quite pleased with myself, not a blank. Then that rod's back out and it's off again. But I'm ready for it this time. I've got my main camera filming it. I've got my little GoPro. I've put that chest strap thing on to see how that comes out. I've got that fish, I don't know, three or four rod lengths out. And they're all fit as hell, those carp. They are good fighters, every single one of them. I'm stood there and my other rod goes off.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got a double take and actually filming it. So bundled this fish, the first fish, which was a 22-pound common, into the net. Fortunately, I've got that net float on, so I could just keep the net around my feet. The fish was secure and safe while I dealt with the other fish, which turned out to be a mirror of bang on 31 pound.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Did you not have a double take at Cromwell as well?
I did, yeah. Yes, I'll just skip past this Icom session because when I finally get round to editing it, all six fish are on there. And yeah, I fished there, this is last weekend. Did 24 hours on Icom, nothing. Went down to Cromwell, which, you know what the intention was. That was to do podcasts from a bivvy, but unfortunately things transpired and prevented you getting there.
Yeah.
A
social, yeah. A night out on the Saturday on the Saturday stopped me from being able to go out on Monday because I was still in such a bad way.
You know, I was trying to make excuses for you there and cover your back, but you just ruined it. But yeah, we had a social with Nath and I was on peg 14. If anyone fishes peg 14, 26 and a half wraps out towards a willow on the far bank, puts you in quite deep and clear water. Just over the weed, had two rods out there, I guess a few bleeps, wound in a great big ball of, well, not even a ball, it was like just hanging on the line, this horrible silt weed stuff. you know, called Nathan through his assistance and netted a nice long 27-pound mirror. You know, really well-conditioned Cromwell carp. My biggest out of there as well, so I was quite happy. And while I was playing that one, Nathan had hold of my right-hand rod because I'm thinking, I had a few bleeps, I'm thinking the fish I'm playing is crossed. No, it hadn't. There was another bloody fish on. So after we've put the rod down, we've done all the pictures of the 27, thought, oh, well, we'll best deal with these now. And then I've wound the other fish, which is a little 14-pound scaly mirror.
Wow. So. Nice to be catching. Something I've not done for a while. While I was pokering in Nottingham at the weekend, I did go down and visit Nathan and stuck my rods out for 3 or 4 hours on the Noddy Lake. It's a stock pond. It's got a few carp up to, it's a couple of 20s in there, I think. Lots of hide and stuff. Even got the old method feeder out, but I didn't catch anything. Then I had to go back to Nottingham. So. And then obviously had a quite a deep run in that comp, so I never got back fishing. My gear's actually still there, set up at the back of Nathan's lodge. I'm gonna have to go back and get it. I'm back home in Blackpool now, and all my tackle's sat on the side of Cranwell.
You've not left your rods out, have you?
No, the receiver doesn't work quite this far. 100 and something miles, whatever it is. But yeah, should we do our advertising? We've been talking about Cranwell, and we do have a Cranwell advert, as they're our first official advertiser.
Yep, they are.
Yes, the Carpcast has its first official sponsor. So I'd like to thank Helen and Nathan of Cromwell Lakes for sponsoring episode 12. Let me tell you a bit about Cromwell Lakes. There's 18 acres with 18 swims. This is including a large disabled swim. There's an angler's lodge offering charging points, fridge freezer, clean toilets, free showers, a seated area inside and out. There's an on-site tackle shop stocked with terminal tackle and bait, including mainline and sticky baits. The car park is secure behind a locked gate. Nets, mats and slings are provided. But this is where it starts to get really impressive when we talk about the stock of carp. They are approaching 60 £30 plus fish and 7 known 40s. All in a Midlands day ticket venue. Prices start at £30 for 24 hours with discounts for longer stays. If you want to contact Cromwell Lakes, you can follow them on Twitter at Cromwell Lake. You can search for them on Facebook. You can check out their website, which is cromwelllake.com, or give Nathan a ring. You can speak to him on 07816 243 023. And you might even see me and Jamie down there.
While we're whoring ourselves out, something I'm involved in is the Northern Angling Show. That's in Manchester, Event City. Our early bird tickets have gone on sale for next year. It's not till next February, but there are a few advantages to buying them nice and early. One of which is you get some free goodies worth $9.99. I think it's a bookazine that will be sent out to you immediately. If you want any info on that, go to northernanglingshow.co.uk, or you can just go on Facebook and Google Northern Angling Show, and there's a link, there's a ticket link and stuff. I think the online prices are £3, £7 and £8.50, depending on your age and stuff. And there is goodies and stuff, and they are going to be limited, the tickets for the Saturday morning. We had too many people there on the Saturday morning last year, so there's going to be a limited amount for the early entry. I mean, you still be able to, you know, pay on the door from 10 a.m. but if you want to get in there early and kind of beat the queues, then you'd be a good idea to get them online early, and there are a limited amount, so go and grab them. northernanglingshow.co.uk. What else we got, Mark? Should we do on the net?
Yes, let's get on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Spawny carp, I see in the show notes. What have you been seeing?
I've seen one or two grossly spore-bound fish. I mean, this happens every year to one or two unfortunate fish. But what I have seen is people catching these fish and just holding them way up in the air. You know, these fish are already ill. So I think the best thing is just unhook them, treat them. If you decide you really want the trophy shot of a fish that's in that poor health just because it's big and fat, just hold them low and get them back in the lake. The chances are they will die anyway. It's, I believe the eggs rot and it's blood poisoning that gets them.
Yeah, they can go a couple of years without spawning, but they need to get it out as soon as they get to like the third season without dropping the spawn, and it's not normally a good sign. I mean, they keep getting bigger and anglers are obviously happy when they catch them, but it's not good for the fish. You know, I'd rather catch it spawned out and know that it's still going to be there for years to come. We mentioned it in the last show, didn't we, about one of the bait companies kind of a heavily spawn-bound fish, one that's, you know, 15, 20 pound up on its normal weight. It was a 40, wasn't it? And they're kind of parading it across their, you know, as an advert for the bait. And I think that's just going a bit too far, that they got a lot of stick on Facebook because of it. And it's, you know, but we can't help catching these things. They pick up our bait and you're chuffed that you catch a nice big heavy fish, but just get it back in the water as quick as you can without snapping its back because of the weight off its belly and lifting it up high and stuff. Just put them back as quick as you can.
Yeah, man, it's something that has gone on for a long time. My first 30 should have weighed about 22 pounds and it was 32.
Well, Chris Yates is 51 from Redby. I mean, how much spawn did that have in it?
Well, that had about 10, 12 pounds. And, well, on the record, remember the Mid-North Ants record?
Yep.
That was a beach ball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've seen some fish that always have that kind of shape and size. You know, the lady used to put on a good 15-pound sort of pre- and post-spawning. But it did it every year. It would drop 12 pound plus every single year and then just put it back on really quickly. You know, it kind of got used to being that size and in that routine. But hence its name, the Fat Lady. But you know, some fish are very comfortable and that's what they do. Some fish, you know, a fish has always been 25 pound year after year after year, and then all of a sudden it's 40 and, you know, looking like a football. That fish is clearly unwell. Yeah. The other reason they do that is their water bloating. What's that called? Where they just keep taking on water until they pop.
It's like an osmosis problem.
Yeah, they just get bigger and bigger every year, don't they? I've seen it happen to a few carp, and again, they go 3 or 4 years, make a few people happy catching big fish, but it's not really a true weight because the majority of it's water. You know, when you lift them up, sometimes the water's just coming out of them, isn't it? I've had fish do that.
Yeah, remember the former Pit One record, a fish called the Universe from years back was known for doing that. They said, I think it was gone before we got on there, but it was said, if you caught that fish, weigh it straight away because it had pissed 3 or 4 pounds of water out on the mat.
Yeah, which one's the true weight? The water. Yeah. I mean, you could just pour it in. And on the nets, that while we're talking about shady weigh-ins.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Jim Shelley has blocked the carp cast from following him on Twitter.
That's actually pretty funny. And my personal one, and I'm actually quite upset. I'm all emotional. I miss him.
He's clearly got a problem. I think we did. I think I mentioned on one show that he's not a great human being, and you know, he has a tendency to act more like a child, throwing his toys out the pram, and that's kind of what he's just done here, for unprovoked, for no reason whatsoever, just blocked the carp cast from following him.
Which is a shame, because I just go onto my other non-fishing Twitter account and look at his stuff anyway.
It's just pathetic, isn't it? It's absolutely pathetic. It just kind of sums him up, and I'm sure we're not going to make any friends doing this. There are a lot of people out there that love him to bits, and, you know, the old Uncle Jim.
Then there are those who know him.
And there are those that know him, yep. And, you know, all the people that say he's a great guy, and you know, he always has time for me. He always replies to me messages, and, you know, you don't know about the people's houses he threatened to burn down with the kids in it, and, you know, all the criminal stuff that he did, and a lot of the things that we know and the industry knows. So, you know, wear your blinkers if you are one of his fans. Don't take away from his angling. He's one of the greatest anglers there is in the country. Would never say any different. But as a human being, he is not a great person.
No. I would also like to say, if someone points this out to Jim, he's more than welcome to come on the Carpcast to answer anything.
Yep, if he wants. if he wants to answer try and deny anything that's been rumoured about him, but he forgets that I wrote his first book with him, you know, and I sat with him for a year listening to all his stories about the actual things that happened as opposed to the things that appeared in the press, you know, and I also had all of these on tape as well, so, you know, it's going to be very difficult to argue with me about facts when it comes from his own mouth.
Yeah, we could edit out any right yes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you know, fantastic angler. There's no green-eyed jealousy or any of that stuff that everybody jumps on and says as soon as anyone says anything bad about him. He's not a great human being. And maybe he's softened in his old age. I don't know. I've no personal problem with him. He's made onto the Carpcast because of, you know, childish little act of... I've kind of avoided going into detail about him, but if he wants to block us, it's going to come up in conversation, so...
He was on the net, so it must be true.
It must be true. Wheels disease.
It's on the net. It must be true.
You don't want those little vermin crawling around your veins.
No, it's something I was aware of from a young kid. For those that don't know, Wheels disease is spread by rats in water. You can literally come in, you know, having a cut on your hand and coming in contact with it. If there's a high concentration in the water, you can contract this disease. And the problem is with it is it's got very similar... it's very similar symptoms to flu, and it's not often picked up unless... you tell, and you go into a bit of a coma, don't you, where you're a bit, you can't really explain, I think, you go ill, and unless it's a hospital or doctor that's come into contact with it previously, they're not going to test for it straight away, because it's fairly rare. You need to make it clear to anybody, if you start to get ill or whatever, that you are a fisherman, you are in contact with water, and get them to check for Wheels disease, because it can kill you. And it's come up because we've seen on the net that Adam Snowden, well-known name in the industry, worked for Carp Talk for a long time, he's been hospitalised with it, and it can affect any of us. But you know a little bit more info about the actual symptoms and stuff, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, I had a quick Google. It's called leptospirosis. Anything nasty has a long name. But symptoms can range from anything such as headaches, muscle pains and fevers, which are like just a normal flu, to severe bleeding
from the lungs.
From the lungs. Yeah, I was avoiding a click there. So we get the full page. From the lungs. If the infection causes a person to turn yellow and have kidney failure, that's when it's known as Wheels disease.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, and because the symptoms are flu-like, it's not often checked for. You know, they just tell you to go and rest and whatever, and it can kill you. So if you ever get those symptoms, even if it is flu, make sure your doctor knows that you do come into contact with water. You're a fisherman, and they need to check straight away, because if it's not caught early, then it will kill you.
Yeah, and even just simple things like, well, I know we both have chilled your beer tins out in the edge of the lake.
Yeah,
that's the way you can catch it. You've also said if you've got any slight cuts or breaks in the skin, even, I know, biting your nails after you've tested your pop-ups in the edge, anything daft like that. So just take your wet wipes and be careful.
Yeah, I always take, you know, like that alcohol hand sanitizer stuff, the gel that you just rub on your hands. I always have some of that in my fishing tackle. I mainly use it for when I'm cooking, because obviously your hands are touching all sorts of dirt and stuff, and then when you're pulling your bacon out into your pan or whatever you're doing with your fingers, obviously your fingernails, everything's always quite dirty, so I've kind of always got into the habit of doing that before I cook anyway. But if you've got it there, you know, in your tackle, like a hand sanitizer, you know, it's no drama to regularly do that. The old bank bug is pretty common anyway. I mean, I don't know if any of our listeners get random bank bugs when they're on the bank. When I fish a lot, I don't get it. I've had it when I was younger. You know, when you just go under out of nowhere, vomiting and shitting on the bank, it's just generally where you've kind of picked something up with cooking or whatever. I know our pal Dave gets it about once a year. He's always had it. Just randomly out of the blue, he'll be fishing first night, second night, whatever, and that's it. He's doubled over.
You know what? That has reminded me of an occasion. This is going back years back to Pit 2 days. I arrived chatting to this fella. He offered to make me a brew. So, yeah, of course. He got his pan out, boiled the water in his pan instead of the kettle, just made me the brew. I didn't think a great deal of it. That was in the Sunken Island swim. I got round the back of the headland slope area, which you're talking, I don't know, 200-300 yards walk. That was it. I was, well, anal squirting. I since found out from someone else later that fella was less than hygienic and was also caught once boiling his socks in that very same pan to wash them.
Yeah, be very wary about taking brews from strangers. I always remember Gary Bayes on Fen. Gary's he's a bit of a hobo when he's fishing. Like you'll see his entire tackle, everything. He used to sling it out of the boat. He'd put his brolly up in his bed chair under it, and nothing else would be under the brolly. It's just the whole swim would be covered in stuff, and he would never take any water. He would always use lake water, and obviously people were complaining. People such as me were like, you know, when he goes to fill his kettle up out of the lake, I'd be like, no, I don't want a brew actually. So to get around that, he used to just take an empty water bottle, and when he got there, fill the water up out the lake so that you thought that it was coming out of out the tap, but it was still out the lake. And I mean, I'm sure it hardens you, you know, I'm sure it probably stops you getting ill if you once your body's used to it, but it's just the thought of it. I like my brews, and be very wary taking a brew off Gary.
Yeah, you know, the best quote I've heard for a good few years comes from Gary. It was, I don't use a mozzie mesh. It traps them in and makes them angry.
Yeah. He's the right character, is Gary. And,
oh, he's brilliant.
Lovely fella. Amazing angler of all species of fish, and pretty good entertainment as well on the bank. We should get him as a guest, actually. I hadn't thought about him recently. He'd make a very interesting one. In fact, I'm going to message him shortly, because we apologise. We don't have a guest this week once again. Everybody's fishing at the minute. We've got four or five people lined up that have all said yes, we just haven't pinned them down to the date. They're either away on holiday, away fishing. They're all like, yep, bring us back end of September or end of August. And we've been 2 weeks without a guest, so we hope you're not too bored of our stories. We'll try and keep it interesting. And any of you listening to this that have told us you're going to come and do one and then stop answering messages, then get in touch, because we shall have you on. But yeah, Gary is somebody I know will get involved. His storytelling is great. So he's one of them that's every time he used to ring him, it's like, yep, I'm dead busy, yep, what do you want? And then an hour and a half later, you're still talking.
Once
you get him started, he goes off. He'll make a great guest. He's got some super stories and extremely knowledgeable in the bait department. So go on.
I had conversations about him with him about bait, and it has gone straight over my head. But it gives you that confidence. I mean, even though I'm no longer Titan Ash, I'm more than happy to carry on using their bait. It's what my confidence is in, and results lately seem to prove that.
Yeah, you've been flying. Somebody else has been flying, actually. It's on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Crowy has caught 47 common on the key again. I mean, when he was on the show, we spoke to him about the key, and he said it really is that good. It does seem to be catching the bigger fish, and well, look at his results. I mean, I think it was his second session or third session on the lake. He's had the
third session, fish, I believe, on Northy Park. That Patson's at Elliot Simak's gaff. That common called Kitch at 47.5. It's the same one Dave Lane had last year at 50.
Yeah, I mean, what a year he's having. You know, he's had the big and out of rainbow. He said on the podcast, didn't he, all the biggest fish, you know, he's been catching the biggest fish in each lake. So it's pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah, one or two are coincidence, not the amount he's having. But also, I think I mentioned this to you, after we'd done the interview with Jules, you know, I was around there for another half an hour, 45 minutes, just chatting fishing, and this is just two people chatting, and Jules were raving about the key, saying it is everything that they claim it to be, and get on it. And I'm just waiting now, when this comes out, how long before some Muppet says, call it the Keycast.
Yeah, we did have a message saying that, saying it should be called the Keycast. We haven't spoke about the key for a few weeks, but it's come up in conversation. You can't argue with it. I've got 20 key in my freezer. Not had a chance to use it properly yet, but I shall be doing. Just before we finish off on the Wheels disease, just want to say from me and Mark, get well soon, Adam. Hope it's not too serious. And you come round, and there was a well-known Olympic rower, Andy Holmes, died from it. So be aware, everybody. We're public service information. Last time we warned you about the was it the hogweed, whatever it's called,
yeah,
stuff that's giving everybody blisters. This week it's Wheels disease. Stay safe out there.
It's on the net. It must be true.
It's on the net. More Team England news. What have you heard?
Well, Rob Hughes is certainly going for it this time round. Well, his first time round, but he's adding more and more strength to the team. The eighth member has been announced, a fella called Paul Booth. Now, the first time I saw the name Paul Booth, I thought of a famous tattooist. It's not him, but it's an experienced carp angler, an ex-English pat, who now lives in Spain, and he owns and runs Ebro Crazy Cats and Carp. He's a guide on the river. That's got to be a good choice.
Wow, yeah. I mean, if you were... if you're going to take an extra team member on, why not somebody that teaches or guides people how to fish on that on the venue? So, yeah, I think that's a very smart move.
Yep, he's not the only one. We've also got a couple of experts on board. We have River Ebro record holder Martin Hodgkinson, as he's the new technical advisor. He's a regular on the river, a very accomplished angler, and a man that will bring some great advice to the team.
With all this inside info, where can we bet on this? I think this has got to shoot, you know, at the England team's chances, or Carp Team England. It's got to shoot them up there.
Without a doubt. And there's another one. There is Graham Maybe. He is the boss of FLE, which, if I'm right, is For Life Experience. A keen competition carper. He's joined the squad in an administration and organisation role.
Has he actually joined the squad, or maybe he's joined?
No, he's called Graham Maybe.
Oh, yeah, but is he in or not?
Uh-huh. But, you're right, I think this is only good, and I don't want to put any pressure on Mr. Rob Hughes, but we expect to win by a fair margin now.
Yeah, this. I think. Yeah, let's get false hopes up as we always do for an England competition and
hey,
England
World football. Cup.
But yeah, I think we actually have a chance here. We believe in our manager. So yeah, if there's somewhere I can gamble, then Rob, send me a message.
I might put a quid on myself.
Yes, yes, we like the gambling. So, that's pretty much all I've seen on the net. We've got some listeners' questions, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got a couple. This is this was an email for you that came to my account, so I got all excited when it said question about the carp cast, and then it was for you.
Ask us a question.
Go on.
So, when Steve Pagalatis caught the Black Mirror from Colmere, that was when he was on the car park, like, did you go up and see it there? If so, he was the guy who did the video of it, £50, 10 ounce.
I remember that day very well. No, I didn't, because I didn't really know anybody then. But it was opening day of the Yateley season, which was the 1st of June. So everybody's, how it works on Yateley then, I don't know if it still does, but you used to go down like a week or two before. You would draw for swims a couple of weeks before the opening day when you're allowed on. You draw for swims and then you could go and marker up and pre-bait or do whatever you wanted to do for a couple of weeks. And then everybody turned up the night before. They'd have a barbecue. I remember Johnny Mac had his barbecue out and everyone had a few beers and stuff. And Steve Pagg was there. Terry Hearn was there because he was fishing that year. There was, was a load of people. So we all had a barbecue and all went off to our various pegs after a few beers. And I remember Steve getting off to go to to go to Combmakers. That's, he'd been sort of baiting, or pre-baiting, walking around, whatever he was doing. He'd been doing that for some time, I think. And I remember the next day, I'm sure it was the 1st of June, which, what year would that have been? It's a good 10 years ago. It was definitely 10 years ago, maybe 11.
And it'd be around there.
Yeah, and I remember the everybody getting excited the following day, everybody, and there was a whole load of them, a big team of them that went down for the videos. Obviously, I didn't really know anybody then. It was the first day on the lake, so... I just heard the stories when everybody came back.
Do you regret not going and seeing that fish?
Oh, obviously, yeah, but I kind of didn't want to invite myself, and, you know, I didn't know anybody. I didn't even know where Combmere was, so... but, yeah, obviously I'd love to have seen that fish, and if I had have walked on that lake and seen that fish, I would have definitely fished there, you know, at some point over the next few years. So, yeah, and... The same guy has asked that question. He was saying, because we mentioned it last week, has anybody, who else has caught the Black Mirror and the Burfield Common? Secret John, Johnny Holt, who is called Secret John for a reason. He doesn't put himself out there, but has one of the best list of big carp, certainly from that area, under his belt. Extremely good angler, from what I'm led to believe. He's the guy I first heard about doing the salt, you know, salt in the swims. There's that famous story about him on, I think we spoke about it on the early carp cast, didn't we? Where he poured a bag of rock salt onto a peg on Raysbury, left it for a week, and somebody else actually didn't know he'd done it and had gone in the peg before and then caught...
Mary's mate, I believe.
Mary's mate off the spot, yeah. Apparently the spot had been created where the fish were digging into it.
That was winter as well, if I'm right.
I forget the time. I remember being in that peg with Jim Shelley when we were doing his book. We were in that peg, and it was him that told me the story. As obviously we recorded it. Oh yeah, he showed me the. It was that big. What was it that was in the lake on the far side, like a bit of machinery?
Not in the Dredger Bay, was it?
Yeah, I think it was the Dredger. Something that was on like the far side. It was a pretty long tow. You had to tow to the spot like a good few hundred yards. But yeah, Secret John obviously caught them both. We won't mention him anymore because he likes to be secret. But I hope he's still out there doing it, catching all them big carp and not telling anyone about him. So,
do you think he's actually called John?
Maybe.
Is that secretive? He's really called Bob. Roderick or something.
And then the chap that sent this question also says that he would buy a t-shirt or a hoodie to keep the podcast going. So we thank you for that. And at some point, I'm pretty sure we will have t-shirts and hoodies. We'll have a stand at the Northern Anglia show next year, and we'll certainly have stuff by then. But I'm hoping we'll. There's a few people inquiring about advertising now, so we will get some. We will get some merchandise at some point, and we do plan to have an event on the lake where maybe you can come and have a social for the weekend. We hire a lake out, and we'll get Terry Edmonds or somebody like that to come and give some casting lessons and stuff, and obviously you can pick our brains and hopefully we'll catch a few fish and get drunk. So we are planning something like that for anybody who fancies supporting the podcast as well. So is an interesting one, possibly slightly controversial. On our last show, we mentioned a new concept for kind of outdoor shows. We mentioned the carp in the park, that looked good from the pictures that I saw. They seem to have done a good job with the production and stuff. Big outdoor video screen. I think the weather hampered things a little bit, and a few comments that I heard were that it was very spread out, like it was quite a long walk, so obviously you're slightly older people or whatever struggled to get around. The lakes are a long way from where the main setup was, but all teething problems that I'm sure they'll sort out for next time. So I think it's a great idea. But something else that came through, I saw this mentioned on the Carp in the Park Facebook page, and whether it's the same person who complained on there or a different guy has sent us a message, which I read now. It says, I attended a show this weekend where a number of anglers on a certain supplier's stands were huddled around together, all staring at iPhones and frankly looking uninterested. I'm sure these guys are cracking anglers, as I've seen them on YouTube. It made me think of your piece on the podcast, as the majority of the stands at the show didn't welcome the public as they passed or wanted to engage with people. Surely there should be a consideration on this point before people hand out sponsorships or ask people to attend these events on the brand's behalf. Wouldn't want anybody who is crap with people or not willing to talk about the products representing their company. I'm not talking about Nash, as they were all great at this event. I just thought it was a shame when you read articles about younger people not getting into fishing at all, and then prime opportunities like this are wasted in a way by what only seems like arrogance. Anyhow, as engaging people, I wonder what your thoughts were on this, or is it me just expecting too much from these so-called industry-leading brands? Keep up the excellent work. It keeps me sane on a Monday and Friday until I can get on the bank. Ash.
Ask us a question.
Thanks for the message, Ash. We did kind of, when we spoke about companies sponsoring anglers, or what, I think the last time we spoke about it was when we mentioned anglers like kind of bragging on Facebook that they receive free stuff. That was kind of the last time we mentioned anything about this. And if you're representing a brand, you do have a responsibility. Nobody likes doing shows, but it's kind of the main thing you have to do as somebody who receives, you know, some sort of benefits from a company, from a brand. You know, you're expected to be a face, you're expected to put your face in magazines, you're expected to engage with the public at shows. It's kind of the main thing. As somebody who's been in that position, I've probably been lazy myself, if the truth be known. You look at the one end of the scale, you look at Julian Cundiff, who was on the show, who goes out of his way to engage with people. He is a true ambassador for carp fishing, and he really makes time for people, which is highly, highly commendable. You know, fishing's a big part of his life, and he makes sure he gives back just as much or way more than he puts in. I'm the other end of the scales. It's probably not me. I don't ignore people, certainly, but you know, it is a chore to be at these shows. Quite often, these people see the other people who work for that company once in a blue moon. They end up getting drunk, you know, in the evening with them, and maybe I know the times where I've not really felt like doing it, I've had a hangover the next day normally and 3 hours sleep, so it's no excuse whatsoever. I mean, you're there to do a job. If, you know, if you turned up at any other job drunk or hungover and couldn't do it to the best of your ability, you'd be kicked out, so there's no excuses whatsoever. Just trying to be objective. I don't know why this company, I'm not going to mention who it is, and I know who was singled out on the actual Facebook page, which is who this lad's pointing to, I think. I'm not going to say who it is because it might be unfair. I wasn't there and didn't see what happened, but I did see this mentioned in a couple of places that it looked like people weren't interested, and you know, I've kind of painted myself as no angel. Not that I would ever deliberately not talk to anybody. You know, I run a fishing show, and I'm extremely busy on that weekend and get stopped everywhere I walk, and always still make time for people. And no matter how, you know, generally I've got the radio going on my hip, and I'm supposed to, you know, I'm rushing to get somewhere to deal with a problem or you know, something that's going on, and you know, you get stopped, and you can't just ignore people. You know, it's the people are there, they're paying the money, they're going in to speak to people, to get tidbits of information, maybe ask me a little bit of information on the lake that I fish, that they're gonna fish, and that's the majority of questions that you get. You know, I've joined X Lake next year, I know you fish there, anything you can tell me about it. You have to make time for these people for a number of reasons. It's you have to do it, and I'd be disappointed. You know, even if I've been in a super busy position where, you know, it's really impractical, I'll still spend a couple of minutes and then say, look, come and see me in half an hour on whatever stand, and, you know, and I'll go through it in more detail. But I just clearly don't think it's right and can't condone it. And what's your thoughts, Mark?
I'm just thinking it because I work in a tackle shop now. I do that 5 days a week.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just don't ignore people. I mean, there is times, and to be honest, quite frankly, there is people you just don't want to speak to. But you do. That's your job. It's my job. And from a sponsored angler's point of view, when I used to do that, you're representing that company. And we both know people who've lost sponsorships through poor conduct at shows.
Yep. Yes, we do. You know, I'm sure the companies are aware of it. I suppose the problem happens when it's an extremely well-known set of people or person, you know, that are very high up in that company or have decent standing. Then obviously you're not going to get rid of them because of all the other benefits, but. I don't know. I believe it was raining a lot of this, so they may well have been huddled under a brolly or something, literally because of the weather. But, you know, I'm sure. I mean, this has been round the public face, but I'm sure it's not going to happen again. I'm sure the bosses of said company or companies have been made aware of this because people have been quite vocal. I'm sure it's something that's not going to happen again.
I'm sure, if I was running a company who was sponsoring anglers to represent my company at a show, I'd issue some simple guidelines just to greet people. Even just saying good morning with a smile gives a good impression, whether they want to talk to you or not.
It's a public job, you know. If you're a public servant, well, public servants, you think of people that work in for the government, but if you're, whether it's a waitress, a barman, bar lady, if you deal with the public, you know, you have to have some sort of social skills. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, you shouldn't be doing a job that deals with the public. And being a sponsored angler, your main role, the main benefit for the company to sponsor you is for you to represent their brand in public, whether it be in magazine articles, whether it be at shows, shop days, whatever it is. You know, that's the main criteria. Oh, even when you're on the bank fishing, you know.
Yeah.
That's the main criteria of your job, and if you don't want to do that, you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be a part of that company. You agree?
I totally agree. And I'm sure the company in question will be a lot better at the next show.
Cool. I've just had a message on the Carpcast page, actually, as we speak. I'm just going to fire it up now on my Facebook without trying to make any annoying clicks. It was a question. I've totally forgotten what it is, but when I read it...
Was this from the one from Shane Kelly?
Yeah, I think it was. I'm just... Can't find how to get onto.
Oh, got it on my phone right now.
Yeah, I've just got it up. There we go. Shane Kelly is. This has happened in the last hour on Saturday.
Ask us a question.
Bit of a strange one, this, and it's not something you hear mentioned much, but do you fellas think that in some way the carp can communicate with each other? The reason I ask is on a recent trip, I was doing a bit of close-in fishing on the back of some marginal weed. I was noticing two particular fish moving in and out of the swim all afternoon, occasionally dropping down and feeding. Later on, I hadn't noticed these two fish come back. A huge sheet of bubbles hit the surface over my hook bait. Here we go, I thought, only for one of the fish to shoot out the weed, circle over me hook baits, pops his mate circles. That doesn't make sense. Only for one of the fish to shoot out of the weed, circle over me, hook bait. Up pops his mate, circles round and follows the other fish out the swim. Now to me, and I could be totally reading too much into this, that fish was saving his mate a visit to the bank to meet me. Or was the thought of a little swim round with his mate more appealing than my hook bait? Have you fellas ever witnessed or heard of anything like this?
Yes.
Yes.
And right. You're not thinking into it too much. That is probably exactly what happened. In fact, on Cast 9, I was chatting to Ed Betteridge. We discussed this exact phenomenon.
Yeah. I can't remember if I mentioned my story then. I think I might have done it, actually. I was on the Manchester Park Lake. And I mean, I've had many examples of fish warning other fish. They definitely communicate 100%. But I forget if I actually told this story, but I'll do it briefly in case someone's heard it. If you haven't heard the previous episodes, there's loads of good stuff in there, so go back and listen to them all. But I was on the Manchester Park Lake. I've been looking for fish all day, ended up finding them right close in a corner. They were popping their heads out in one corner of the lake. I flicked a rod onto a clear spot that I knew where the spot was, literally a rod length and a half out. Managed to get another rod out and a chod rig sort of near, well in the area where they were showing as well. Was getting liners straight away. It was just a matter of time before I got a bite. They were, you know, like proper feedy, nutting out every few seconds. And had a few false alarms where I thought it was off, the rod tip bending round, but it was just an aggressive liner because there was so many fish there. Eventually got a bite from a fish called China, which I'd had four times, just kept catching that fish. It's like a scraper 30 with one eye's black, why it's called China. And I landed it, put it in the retainer and stuff, in the edge. The fish was still showing, so... And I mean, it was really exciting. They're only a rod length or two out from the corner of the lake. So I managed to flick the rods back out again before weighing and sorting this fish out. And went and got my pal, who's in the next peg, went and got him to come and do pictures and stuff. And I remember when I went to put the fish back, I had second thoughts. I nearly didn't put it back in that peg, but it was a bit of a trek to the next spot that I could have put it back in. Because I'm like right in the corner of the lake and there's all bushes and stuff between me and the next peg. And then it would have been like taking the fish up a steep bank and then walking along the path and then going down another steep bank. I didn't really want to do that. But it did cross my mind that when I put this fish back, it's obviously stressed because it's been caught and it's going to have to swim to go anywhere. It's going to have to swim past all these fish that are not in a rod length out. Anyway, I put it back. And the fish stopped showing instantly, and I mean instantly, and they were showing all the way while I was landing the fish. You know, they were still popping their heads out while the fish was in the retainer sling in the edge. They were popping their heads out all the way through, flicking the rods back out and taking the pictures and all sorts, and they only stopped when I put the fish back, and it obviously conveyed danger signals to the other, and that was the end of it. Totally missed a chance. Should have put it back, you know, at least somewhere else where it could have maybe swam the other way, further down to the right or something. But it was 100%. And I've seen it, the exact example Shane gives where one fish is spooked off a spot and it spooked the others away. I've seen that as well.
Yeah, so you think you put that fish back, it's seen all the other fish and said, that classic geezer's had me again, come on, we're off.
I just think maybe they saw that it was stressed and something wasn't right and they all just vanished. I mean, maybe it was just that simple, but it certainly conveyed danger to the other fish. They just stopped showing instantly. There was no other reason for them to just stop like that, and they vanished. I did the night there and that was the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the negative side of it, but do you think... one fish finds your bed of bait. Do you think that thinks he calls his mates in and they all have a good feast? It works for us as well.
Yeah, I think the competition side of it works the other way. You know, the competition for food, that definitely does happen.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, have we got any more listeners' questions?
Do you want to do that bait one that we've got in the questions?
Yeah, fire away.
Was it? From a chap, Ken Wharton. He says, question for your show. In the light of baitcraft ceasing production, homemade or shop-bought, remembering that nowadays you don't know what goes on them. I think he's basically saying, do you trust rolling companies?
Ask us a question.
No. We've had this conversation before. Not saying there aren't some great ones out there, and you build up trust with the company, so I'm sure if you've had good experiences then they will continue to be good. but I've never liked bait companies that don't roll their own bait. You know, you're the one, you're the ultimate quality control. You know how it should be. You know the strength of the mix. You know, you want to take out the possibility of somebody else watering that mix down and trying to make more money out of it. You know, make it, you know, put in some sort of cheap mix into it and double in the quantity. We know how expensive bait is, and we know how much money changes hands with bait. So I would be much happier with you know, knowing that I was buying from somebody that was making their own bait. Certainly. I mean, I couldn't really see what he was getting at with this message, because I haven't heard the actual the story that's gone on with this. But I'm sure there must have been. I did reply to Ken and say, you know, I'm not sure, I understand what you're going about, but he said that Baitcraft don't produce bait any longer. They've had trouble with prices and products. It must be a tough industry, that is for sure. I only know some behind the scenes stuff with Nash. I've been with him a long time, but you know, I know when the, you know, my favourite sort of this S-Mix, a squid, was out of it. I hope that wasn't what I thought it was.
It was.
That was loud in my headphones. I know, like, the squid powder that they use, you know, they've struggled to get it sometimes, and we've ended up waiting, you know, 2 months to get a new batch of it in, you know. And I've been without my favourite bait for time. You're ringing up and you're like, have we got it in? And they've been missing one of the ingredients, because, you know, ingredients come from various places. Oh, I can smell it.
It comes straight over the Pennines.
You know, ingredients come from certain places. I forget where they get the squid powder from. But it's a specific type of squid that's got more aminos in than most squids. It's not like you can just use any one. It's a specific one that they use. And, you know, I know the fish meals, they go in short supply at certain times of year, just because of the industry, you know, the fish meal industry. There are times of years when it's not in abundance. And when you order it in tons and tons and tons, as a company that big probably does, then, you know, there are delays and things going wrong. So same with any business, you know, there are problems and hiccups. So it can't be easy for a small company on a small volume level, you know, encountering them same problems. If you've got, you know, 100 tons on back order for Nash, 100 tons on back order for Mainline, what's a guy that orders half a ton, you know, every 6 months, what chances has he got of getting to the front of the queue? He's not. They're going to sort out their big customers first, and the smaller ones will kind of have to make do at the end. So I don't know what's happened with this Baitcraft, whether they've gone out of business or whether they've just stopped rolling their own bait or what they're doing. But I've never liked the idea of buying from rolling companies personally. I'm just like, why wouldn't you just get it from that company? And I know from running our fishing show, you know, we have suppliers of rolling equipment. You know, there's a Dutch guy that comes to the show that sells all the heavy duty industry stuff, the machines. So it's not ridiculously expensive. If you're going to make bait, you know, produce bait, then I would want to be rolling my own. I don't see any reason in the modern age. You know, it's not like the old Gardner roller tables that I used as a kid that rolled 10 boilies at a time, and you know, making 5 kilos of boilies was stressful. You know, it was a full day. Those days are long gone, you know. It's all sorts of, and have been for years. So I don't see any reason why companies wouldn't roll their own bait, ultimately have that quality control. I mean, bait's such a personal thing that if you haven't done it right, or if you've trusted somebody else to do it, and you know they haven't done it to your standards that you want it to be done at, then that's going to impact you directly. Because, you know, people don't catch on the bait, or they lose confidence in it, or whatever, that, you know, they're not going to buy it, and that directly hurts your business. So I don't see why there is a market for bait rolling companies out there. And I remember they used to be slightly cheaper than buying it from direct from the company, and I can't see how that is would be the case. I mean, how can they go and buy the ingredients, then have their own labour rolling the bait and then selling it and shipping it? How can they do that cheaper than the actual company that manufactures it? It doesn't make sense to me.
It does if you think they're cutting it with biscuit crumbs or whatever else they can sweep up off the floor.
That, you know, if you were cynical,
allegedly.
And if you were cynical, then that's the only conclusion you could come to. I'm sure that doesn't happen. There are some reputable companies out there that have been going a long time, and don't want to cast aspersions on them. But personally, if I was going to go and buy a Rolls Royce, I wouldn't buy it from Skoda.
What's wrong with Skodas? Skoda. I like my Skoda.
Skoda's fine, but you know, I'd buy a Skoda from Skoda because they know how it should be put together. Would you trust Skoda to put together a Rolls Royce?
I probably would, actually, because it would be a cheaper engine in a expensive shell.
Yeah, maybe it's a bad analogy, but you get my point.
Yeah, certainly do. If you go to, well, get it from the source rather than someone else.
Yeah, that's my opinion on it. So
yeah, I think it's the same. But and I also have been in the shop this morning. There was had a conversation with a chap who just started rolling his own baits, and he actually brought in a few samples of his first effort. And yeah, I'm apparently the carp expert there. So he was asking me a few questions, and you know, about rolling bait, and he seemed a bit shocked when my reply goes, "Come, well, I've not rolled a bait for probably about 15 years." He's like looking at me, going, "Now," I said, "Well, it's time consuming. I'd rather go fishing. I'll buy the bait from someone who's an expert at it."
I used to roll all my own bait, and there is a sense of satisfaction of rolling or making your own bait. Even if I bought a base mix, I would still, you know, put a couple of little tweaks into it, put my own things in it, and then your own flavouring. And there's a great sense of satisfaction doing that. You know, the most I roll these days is hook baits, and I haven't done that for a couple of years. You know, we used to really spend time making our court ball pop-ups we used to use. You know, there was an art to getting them smooth so that you could put them out for 3 days. There was an art to it, a knack.
Sieve all the chunky bits out, the base mix out first.
And then you know, we'd dip them, dry them, so they've got like three layers of kind of food dip soaked in, then air dried, then soaked in, and then enjoyed it. You know, when you get a bite on a bait that you put your own labour in, it's definitely better. You know, it feels good. And I used to roll my own bait when I was a kid, purely for economic reasons. I mean, you know, going back to the company's rolling the bait, they've still got costs rolling it. I know I can save money by buying the base mix and rolling it myself, because it's my labour, my own man hours. And you know, and I could save 30-40% on a shop bought bait by just buying the same mix. And then obviously you tweak it yourself very slightly. Probably doesn't make any difference, but it's just something that, you know, your bait is not identical to any other bait out there that's on that bank. And I don't know if it makes any difference or not, but it used to make me feel good when I got a bite. And the amount of times I'd do my own bait and get a bite on the first session that I used it, and it's a great feeling. You know, my time's a bit more precious than that, being able to spend whole nights. But I have done, you know, for years and years and years. And if I was going to do it again, if I had a nice shed and a bigger house and, you know, a little man cave in the back garden, then maybe I would consider buying some equipment one day.
I'll just buy a bigger freezer and buy more. But when you mentioned rolling baits, it reminded me when me and a kid I used to fish with, Darren, I think we'd gone halves on about a 25 key sack of some basic fish meal base mix. We'd actually had a drive out to Hayes at Grimsby and bought some Robin Red, some Nectar Band, I think it was called, this other stuff called Prosecto Insectivorous, which is basically liquidised bugs. Added it all, you know, bought a few flavours that we'd read about, and one of the flavours was Hutchie's Monster Crab. Do you ever use that one?
Yeah, all the Hutchie flavours when I was young.
Yeah, so I remember one, we used to roll it in his shed, a 20 head mix at a time, then we'd split it into four bags. I'd bait up on a Tuesday with one, he'd bait up on a Thursday with one, and then we'd have a bag each to fish with over the weekend. And we caught quite a few. But I remember this one afternoon we've been rolling. It's, you know, 30 degrees. It is hot. No wind around. We're just wearing shorts, tops off in his shed. We're sweating, rolling these monster crab boilies. His neighbour, who we didn't get on with anyway, she came running out of the house, started swearing at us and taking the washing in. She'd obviously got a whiff.
What was the other nasty hutchy one? Not Secret Agent.
Secret Agent.
It was Secret Agent, wasn't it? If somebody peed you off on a lake.
Pull that down the air vents in the car.
I don't know if anybody ever did it. It's possibly somebody we've already mentioned on the show might have done that. Rumours, if rumours are to be believed. I'm sure that's happened. But
I remember using lemon juice to get that stuff off my fingers because it seemingly was the only thing that worked.
Yeah, it was a pretty nasty one. It just reminded me of another bait rolling story. Roger Bacon, Manchester angler, well-known 80s and 90s, who comes up in conversation regular on here. He, I think it was in the 80s, the kind of the main lake at the time was a days only lake. What was it called? I forget the name. It was quite a well-known lake. It was days only, and I think he'd been invited on there first time. And the two people that were the biggest names in the Northwest at the time were Bernard Loftus, and was it Frank? It may have been Frank. Frank's agreed to come on the show at some point again. He wants to record it on the bank during a fishing session, so he's going to be a great guest in the future. I think it was Frank on the other side of him. Anyway, if it wasn't Frank, I apologise, but it was my memory is not great. But he was fishing in between him and wasn't particularly in the hottest peg, and he was really looking forward to this session. He'd made his bait the night before. Used to obviously hand roll his own bait. He'd made his bait, he'd come out in the morning, whatever time, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever, to get his gear out, checked his bait and it had gone off. Something had happened like to this bait. Had no option of getting any other bait. Said it smelt really vinegary. Something had reacted and gone wrong, basically. And he had no other choice but to, you know, go and fish this lake for the first time, you know, with these top anglers and take this bait. He took it and ended up catching, I think he caught the Cheshire record, which was a 30 at the time. He basically hammered it on this day while the two top anglers, you know, two of the best anglers in the country, certainly in the Northwest, didn't catch anything like what he caught, if they caught anything at all. Maybe we'll get Roger on to tell this story actually at some point. He's completely believes it was the bait. Whatever had happened in the reaction that had gone wrong in this bait, the fish absolutely loved, to the point of they went crazy for it. His results were abnormal that day, and he said to this day he's tried to recreate it. He's tried to do whatever it was, and he's never managed to do it again. Well, something went down with that bait that the fish just went crazy for. He reckoned they were swimming past everyone else's bait to get to his. It was kind of that good, but it was an accident, and he doesn't know what caused it to this day.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if it was when I interviewed Mark Holmes or it was one of the YouTube videos he's on. He was talking about, you know, this bait, this fermentation thing. And yeah, there's a very, very narrow window where the carp will go mad for it, and then either side, not.
Yeah,
just that small window will get them going gary.
It kind of sounded like what happened here, some sort of fermentation thing, but he's not sure why. It wasn't the eggs, you know. He tried everything since, you know, tried letting eggs go off and making bait and, you know, ooh, tried to recreate the situation and couldn't.
Yeah, you know, I remember the first freezer baits I ever bought a long, long time back were rich with tutti frutti's.
Yeah, I remember, you know, those very well.
Yeah, and if they went off, all the sugars just came out of them. They went like sticky, like they used. It was like a, well, like a sap, for want of a better word.
The mainline baits used to do that. They activate that. It'd do it within a day. You know, a lot of people used to take them out the freezer a day before they go fishing and let them start to go sticky. And people believed that it was all the enzymes and stuff coming out, and that's what made the baits work. I mean, it was a cracking bait, that activate.
Yeah, I'm sure it still is. It's something we still get in the shop.
Really? Do they still sell it? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. They were the main line. You get, obviously, the Grange, New Grange, Hybrid, and Activate.
Yeah, I mean, I think we ought to get a bait expert on. It's got me excited to, you know, because I can only talk about personal experiences. I don't really know any of the technical stuff with bait. Possibly get Mike Wilmot on, Essential Baits. You know, B5's been one of the best baits. Certainly Gary Bays. Or even
definitely
Keith Jones knows a hell of a lot about bait as well.
Yeah, Bill Cottam as well, Nutribait's man. He's a Sheffield, Yorkshire lad. He has a popular column in Cart World as well. Very dry sense of humour.
Dry sense of humour and lots of stories. Yeah, give Bill a message. See if he fancies coming on. Or he's local to you. You could go and record him, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's about 25-30 miles down the road, I think.
Yeah, well, get in touch. So I think that's it for listeners' questions. If you have any questions that you want for us, or want us to give our opinion on, lead you down the wrong path, or whatever, then by all means send them in to our Facebook page or Twitter or any way, and we shall endeavour to get any interesting ones on the show. Did you see the interview in Carp Talk that I did last week, the bumper edition? We mentioned it on the last show. I haven't seen it myself yet, but I've had a few phone calls and stuff.
Worth a look.
Yeah,
it's good.
Came out pretty good. Yeah, like a five page interview in the current Carp Talk.
Yeah. I've looked at the pictures. I've not read it.
No, you probably know most of what's said in it anyway, but it's certainly worth a look if it's still in your shops. It's a big bumper double edition. There's loads of good stuff in it by the look of it. I'm hopefully going to get one in the post this week so I can have a good read of the rest of it, but you know, I would go out of my way to buy the Christmas Carp Talk, you know, the bumper one they did. It used to have a list of all the 40s caught, that, well, it used to be 30s and 40s, and they used to do like a top 100 fish caught every year. You should look forward to that every winter. I think it was the New Year edition or whatever. It was always the big winter double one.
Yeah, I remember reading that, and I always enjoy reading Chris Ball's stuff as well. I'm a bit of a carp history geek, and he always seemed to contribute quite a bit to that one.
And we'll be another superb guest. Hit him up.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, I will.
And the final thing, worth a look. You've been doing Carpcast TV.
I've been trying, but I'll say at best I'm just scraping in amateur at any video in recording, filming or editing, but I'm going to give it a go. My wife bought me a GoPro the other birthday or Christmas, so I think I better use it to make it a worthwhile investment. And with the role I've been on, catching a few fish, I think it's rude not to try and share. Although I did periscope a couple last time out, and I've now got to wait till the 15th before I can go on Facebook through the 4G because I've keyed all the data on my phone, so I might not be doing that too often again.
Well, if you weren't so tight, you could actually just buy another gig of data. I've had to do it a few times when I've been fishing, and I've watched a film. I think I used to get like 10 gig of data. I've never used it, but yeah. I've got a shared plan now with my girlfriend and daughter are both on it, and it gets tanned every month, so I end up paying another £15 a month something for an extra 10 gigs.
I'm a bit I'm just going through a run at the minute where I seem to be breaking everything, having to replace it. I just had to replace a rod that I snapped. I'll tell you exactly how I did that, because it's my own damn fault. I've got my cradle, I've got it balanced up on the end drying out.
Yeah,
it's on the edge of the swim, which is about 2 foot above the bottom where the rods are. I'm playing another fish, and there's a bit of a gust of wind. The cradle came crashing down onto my rods, and it caught one of my NRXDs, which is a £400 rod on a sweet spot on the butt section, and then it became a three-piece.
Oh dear, have you ordered another bit?
Yeah, I've already got it. That was, what's his name? Is it Kurt at Nash on the Returns? Yeah, he's got me another one, bless him. And do you know what? I also knackered my bivvy that same session.
Oh dear, is it the curse of catching? like the old Elstow curse, you know, if you had a good
it's
session.
It's the carp gods. You know, they've punished me and, well, like we say, they giveth and taketh away.
Yeah, then when they take it, it only costs you money.
Yeah, although, no, the brolly was my own fault, to be honest. You know, the wire that holds all these spokes to the pole in the middle.
You decided to untie it.
No, I didn't decide to untie it. It's gone rusty because I can't be asked to dry anything out.
Ah, right, okay.
So, I get some new wire. That should be easy repairable.
Yeah. Yeah, just buy another. But you need data. We need to be kept informed when you're on the bank.
Yeah, I need to keep in touch with Facebook. And at least all I can do now, I can download numerous podcasts to it and just keep myself entertained and watch the water instead of just lying in the bivvy, looking at Facebook and Twitter and seeing who's moaning about who. Seeing what's on the net.
That's cool. Next week's show, we have we're going to do an American special, I think, aren't we? We have a few listeners in America, and we've got a few interviews lined up with one of the guys. I mean, it's if you're not interested in American fishing, as probably most people will never go carp fishing in America, the chap seems very interesting. Well, we've got two or three interviews lined up with people that are involved in the carp groups over there, and you know, one of them did his carp fishing over here and fish savvy and stuff. So it sounds like it's going to be a very interesting one. And we hope to lock up a few of these people that promised to come on as guests. Yeah, we hope to lock them up over the next week or two. So we've got a good few shows coming up.
Yeah, definitely. The last two have been just us. So I think, well, you can disagree, but I think we've got a bit of ground to make up. We're on a snowball of momentum. And I want to keep it going. And I think, well, I mentioned momentum. I'll tell you the final figure for July's downloads.
Go on.
We had the target of 7,500, and we got 10,219.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So, again, if you want to advertise, get in touch with us via our Facebook page or Twitter, or if you know us, then give us a call. We must be the fastest growing medium in carp fishing out there at the minute, by some chunk. So yeah. Get involved.
I've just thought of something. You mentioned the Christmas Carp Talk.
Yeah.
They have all the Carp Talk awards and that they hand out at Five Lakes where people vote.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to add a new category for the best carp fishing podcast?
I think we're winning at the minute. We're the only one.
I've never won anything.
Yeah, well, there's a competition of one, and we'll still come second probably if we've got your luck. But that's it. We'll see you next time.
Yep, see you then. Keep catching.